to diplomatic pull or even military might. But that's about to change. I mean, we saw China being extremely determined to assert full sovereignty over Hong Kong in the face of enormous resistance and pressure from the Americans and the British. But in the end, nothing happened. China asserted full sovereignty, and all the British can do is to give UK passports to their supporters in Hong Kong so they can flee. And you know, whilst the US is focused on these parochial trade issues, trying to hold Chinese technological progress, I think China will just surprise everybody and simply change the weather.
They've made their point clear. We'll have to see how the US is going to take this.
Yes.
I'm sure the US is going to continue down this path.
Yeah.
Time will tell. Thank you very much for that.
You're welcome.
Do appreciate it, Mahan. Thank you for your input, Mahan Abedin there. And also, I'd like to thank the director of the University or the Center for Chinese Law and Policy at Durham University, Professor Ming Du, for being on the show. As we enter a new multipolar world order, the way in which nations act and react with each other takes the stage on a host of levels. Whereas traditional competition may have come in the form of military might, today the world sees a combination of many factors, ranging from military, economic, and regional competition, which all play their part in the global arena. For China and the US, the Cold War is being fought at an economic level, with a host of tactics being thrown into the ring, including blocking Chinese technology under the shady cloak of national security, to the proxy Cold War is being fought in Hong Kong and in Taiwan, both of which have seen heavy U.S. influence in their ongoing sagas. What now remains to be seen is how the situation will play out as China goes from strength to strength, the U.S. opens a new chapter in its policy towards China with the new man in the White House. That's all the time we have for this episode. Don't forget, we want to hear your thoughts on this or any other topic. So do get in touch with us by writing to us. In the meantime, you have from me, Kovit Halfway, and the whole team here on Economic Divide. Stay safe.
In the limelight.
Investigators said identifying more genetic mutations in an individual's cancer also enables more targeted treatment for that patient. That includes finding mutations not previously associated with their cancer type, which opens the door to using drugs targeting those mutations that have traditionally been used against other cancers. We now present you an article written by staff writers of Science Daily website under the heading, Larger Panel Finds More Gene Mutations, Treatment Targets for Leukemia. Please stay with us for more of the Science Daily article. Investigators said a gene panel that looks for about 10 times the number of cancer-causing genes as panels currently used to diagnose and fine-tune treatment for a variety of cancers is effective at identifying problematic genes in the most common leukemia. The investigators reported in the journal PLOS ONE, the 523 gene panel developed by San Diego-based biotechnology company Illumina. The US, which includes all genes known to potentially cause cancer, can be readily adopted for use in clinical laboratories to diagnose acute myeloid leukemia, or AML. They said identifying more genetic mutations in an individual's cancer also enables more targeted treatment for that patient. That includes finding mutations not previously associated with that cancer type, which opens the door to using drugs targeting those mutations that have traditionally been used against other cancers. Dr. Ravindra Koha, Vice Chair for Translational Research in the Department of Pathology, at the Medical College of Georgia at Augusta University in Georgia said, having a bigger panel gives us more targets. Dr. Ravindra Koha, the study's corresponding author, said, part of what we found here is this 523 panel works for leukemia, and that it's a practical and clinically relevant tool for clinical laboratories for routine molecular profiling of blood cancer. Dr. Vasmi Kota, MCG hematologist and oncologist who directs the bone marrow and stem cell transplant program at Georgia Cancer Center and AU Health, said, acute myeloid leukemia, or AML, is a distinct disease in every patient because, as investigators are increasingly learning, the gene mutations involved may not be the same in any two patients. Dr. Vasmi Kota, the study co-author, said, the term leukemia is broad and we should not be treating everyone the same, adding, that is one of the reasons you see the same treatment working for some and not working for others. The MCG investigators retrospectively analyzed 61 bone marrow samples, which included samples from 40 patients with confirmed leukemia and detailed clinical information on 27 of those patients. They write the larger panel identified 880 variants in 292 genes, and only 14.8% of the variants were in genes included in the smaller 54-gene panel currently in use by many laboratories, adding, the remaining 749 variants are not typically assessed in a leukemia diagnosis or detected by the 54-gene panel. When they looked at the information available on those 749 variants in follow-up, they found at least 14 of the variants in 10 genes likely could contribute to acute myeloid leukemia, or AML, and 96.2% of the patients had at least one of the 14 novel variants. They also found 22 variants in 5 other genes associated with other tumor types in the vast majority of patients with acute myeloid leukemia. They said novel variants identified in the patients might be significant in providing a more complete diagnosis and prognosis for patients and in better identifying treatment that most directly target their cancer-associated mutations. Often overlap in the mutations that contribute to different types of cancer, and the broader assessment of mutations presents should help identify those. Dr. Vasmi Kota said, the more we know, the more it expands our knowledge of leukemia and expands our way of treating it. Dr. Koha added, if you find something abnormal in the genes, which is there in other cancers, then we use those drugs in these patients. Dr. Vasmi Kota said, the hope is by finding more of these mutations, we no longer call the cancer by a name, but we call it and treat it by the mutations. The Georgia Esoteric and Molecular Laboratory, which Dr. Koha directs, was the first in the nation to validate the 523 gene panel by comparing results to establish but less comprehensive methods, like polymerase chain reaction, PCR, used to amplify small segments of DNA to look for suspect changes. For this study, they also ran the same bone marrow samples multiple times on the 523-gene panel and found essentially 100% consistency each time. They also did individual tests looking for specific mutations identified by the panel, and those were consistently on par with the panel's findings as well. They found the larger panel nearly 100% effective in clinical sensitivity, specificity, precision, and accuracy. Dr. Vasmi Kota said, it's a panel we can consistently do in a laboratory on a routine basis in a cost-effective way that increases our understanding of the gene mutations contributing to an individual patient's cancer. Whilst noting their sample size was small, There were interesting clinical correlations, like finding 7 mutations in a 23-year-old male who had been diagnosed with 2 mutations. They said the new mutations they found included 2 novel variants now associated with leukemia and other cancers. The patient who had the highest number of gene mutations identified by the larger panel only survived 4 months and 2 days. Dr. Vasmikota noted that decades have passed without any real advancements in acute myeloid leukemia treatment, but this year 6 new drugs, which target 6 mutations identified by the smaller gene panels, have been approved. Dr. Kolher hoped the new panel will help expand the new drug number at least 10 times as well.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son, he's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Salamun alaikum, dear brothers and sisters. May Allah's peace and blessings be upon you all, and you're listening to the program Islamic Upbringing, only on IRIB English Radio. And in this program, we discuss problems and questions parents have regarding the Islamic upbringing of their children. And the answers are mostly based upon the book Children in Quran and Sunnah, compiled by Abdullah Ray Shahri. So I'm Hasnain, and we have our guest in our studio, Brother Miqdad. Salaamu alaikum, brother.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullah.
Brother Miqdad, one of our listeners has written to us that I wanted to ask who makes decisions at home, me or my husband. Sometimes my children come to me and they ask permission to do something, and if I say no, then they go to their father and hear another reply. What do we do in that situation? So this thing usually occurs that, you know, if children don't get permission from their moms, they go to their father and they get the permission for it. So what do moms do in these situations?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Yes, a very interesting question. Who makes the decisions at home? Let's tackle this from a different perspective. First and foremost, it's very important that between the parents, between husband and wife, there should be a discussion that takes place beforehand. Mm-hmm. And things are set and both of them are on the same page.
Mm-hmm.
Contradictions between parents can lead to a lot of confusion in children. That I don't know who's in charge, who makes the decision, who do I follow, whose words do I listen to. And also it leads children to take advantage of situation, right? I know if my mom says no, then I'll just go to my dad and I'll get whatever I want. If my dad says no, then I'll go to my mom and get whatever I want. And this leads to kind of a disorganized and not stable lifestyle, basically. If you want a child to be stable and understand that there are rules, rules are followed, there's a reason why we have rules, we have a goal, We organize in our family. Mm-hmm. We need to make sure that both parents are on the same page, yeah. Not that one says yes and one the other says no, and then we don't know what's happening. Mm-hmm. So really strongly encourage parents to make sure that they've talked about these things beforehand.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And they know that between them, if a child comes and says, I want to go to my friend's house at 4 p.m., am I allowed? You both know what the rule is.
Mm-hmm.
I want to have my second sweet of the day. I want to not eat my vegetables today. At dinner time, I'll go hungry, or I'll have something else for dinner rather than what's what's on the table. Or I'll do my homework after I've watched TV, or before I watch TV, or whilst watching TV, or I'll be eating whilst watching TV. All these rules at home, basically, that we have, and all these things that happen in our day-to-day life with our children, we should have discussed it beforehand, and we should know what the other person will say. And you're on the same page. If mom says yes, then dad will say yes as well. If mom says no, dad will say no as well. So this was first and foremost.
So sometimes child seeking permission from his mom, then mom replies like, go and ask your dad.
So we'll talk about that in a second.
Let's take a short break and we'll be right back after that.
IRIB English Radio presents A Priceless Gift to Parents. Do you have problem with your kids?
I have two boys. One is 5-year-old and the other one is 3.5. And they constantly fight and wrestle with each other, and it often gets to a dangerous stage.
My 18-month-old daughter has learned to eat by herself, and she just refuses that I feed her. But usually, all the food basically goes everywhere except her mouth. So how can we allow this strife to happen for the purpose of freedom?
Don't worry. We're here to help.
For a child, the purpose of the food is only to feed. It's also for him to learn. It's also for him to explore and fulfill the need of curiosity, fulfill the need of freedom.
Islamic upbringing. Contact us. EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
So welcome back to your listeners, and we're discussing about children seeking permission from their parents and getting different replies. So Brother Megda, I had a question that sometimes it happens that children seek permission from their mom and mom replies to them, go and seek permission from their dad. So it's like, who's the decision maker over here?
Yeah. So the second point is that who really has the authority to make decisions, or who really makes all the rules at home? Who makes the decision? Ideally, important and major decisions are done by the father, right? As the authority in the house lies in the father's hand. Yeah. So in a family, you have a powerhouse and you have a house of mercy, right? On one side, you have strength, authority, power. These are come from the father, basically. And on the other side, you have gentleness, kindness, love,
that's from
mercy,
mom.
Which comes from mom. And both of them are necessary for a balance in a child's life. Right? Both are necessary. Both have a place and a hand to play in the growth, the balanced growth of a child. And obviously, that doesn't mean the dad has to be violent or ruthless. Obviously, no. And that doesn't mean that the mom can't have authority. No, that doesn't mean that. It just means that the perspective that they're coming from and is that perspective, basically. But obviously, having authority doesn't go against having love as well. A dad needs to show a lot of love, a lot of attention, a lot of respect, a lot of kindness as well. Authority has to have kindness and generosity in it as well. And similarly, a mom, although she's full of love and full of gentleness and tenderness and kindness, at the same time she has to be firm as well. She has to be has some sort of level of authority as well, that she's heard. Since she has to show strength as well, that she doesn't fall off when there's difficult moments. She doesn't crumble. These things are important. So there's balance, basically. But the spring of authority is from the father, and the spring
of mercy.
But
even mom can make decisions for her children, right?
So this is the point I want to get to, is that ultimately when we realize this balance in a family, we realize that when it comes to decisions which stem from authority, they come from the father, right? So the rules are decided by the dad. Dad makes the rules, and dad has the last word in the house, right? If something goes wrong, if there's an argument, if there's a confusion about something, mm-hmm. authority and decision goes back to what dad says.
Yeah.
Now, let me make a point over here before moving on, explaining a bit more about this. This point I'd like to mention is that if we don't have this in the house, mm-hmm. and we've seen it time and time again in families where the balance is switched, where
yeah.
mom makes all the decisions, mom behaves like a dad at home,
mm-hmm.
children often are faced with an identity crisis,
mm-hmm.
Gender identity issues.
Mm-hmm.
They're faced with moral difficulties, moral challenges.
Uh-huh.
They're faced with mental health a lot of times,
yeah.
right? Because I was supposed to see strength in my dad. This house has been created, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And I saw that my mom was actually shouting at my dad, and she was telling mm-hmm. my dad what to do.
Yeah.
She was behaving like the boss in the house, and my mm-hmm. dad was always oppressed, always trampled upon,
mm-hmm.
Always humiliated in front of everybody.
Mm-hmm.
If that happens, then very likely that this will lead to a mental issue, mental difficulty, or a psychological difficulty,
yeah.
or even a moral difficulty in children, because mm-hmm. that's how we've been created, that the structure of the family is in this way, that decisions and authority comes yeah. from dad.
Yeah, well, that's right, actually, and let's continue after a short break. So, dear listeners, stay tuned.
يا مقضي الخيرات يا مقضي الخيرات يا مقضي الخيرات
The Prophet صلى الله عليه وآله وسلم said, Honor your children and teach them good manners.
يا مقضي الخيرات يا مقضي الخيرات
Welcome back to your audience, and we're talking with Brother Meghdad. And Brother Meghdad, I have a question. That as we're talking about setting rules, and it should be pre-planned, everything that what children can do and when they can do it. So what sometimes happens is, you know, there are some exceptions, or they go against the rules. So then yeah. there's difference of opinions between the moms and the dads.
So what's important to realize is that when I say that dads have the authority and make the rules, mm-hmm. okay? This is for major rules. This is for
yeah.
those big decisions. This
mm-hmm.
is for those things that decide the general path that a family is taking.
Mm-hmm. Right?
However, when it comes to small, small things, what happens is that the dad, because the mom spends most time with the children,
yeah.
because she has much more contact with the child,
mm-hmm.
he sets the general principles, and
mm-hmm.
then moms decides on the small rules,
mm-hmm.
right? And those exceptions that happen, they happened, or they decided at that small level between the mom and the child, basically.
Yeah.
And so what parents need to do is that they need to realize that dad needs to say, these are the general rules that we're going to have, basically.
Mm-hmm.
But then the rest is mom can decide,
yeah.
right? So when a child comes to dad and asks something,
mm-hmm.
he knows that certain things I've agreed with mom that she'll make the decisions.
Mm-hmm.
So even though I'm the powerhouse and the authority over here, it's perfectly fine for dad to say that, you know what, ask your mom, she'll
yeah.
tell you what to do,
mm-hmm.
right? She's in a better position to make this decision right now.
Mm-hmm.
She knows the general rules,
mm-hmm.
but whether you should have, I don't know, watch TV before breakfast or after breakfast,
uh-huh.
or whether you should go to your friend's house at this yeah. particular time or not, the decision lies with your mom.
Mm-hmm.
She'll decide, right?
Yeah.
So it's perfectly fine for the dad to allow decisions that are made, allow the decision to be made by his wife, by the mom in the house.
Mm-hmm.
As for exceptions,
mm-hmm.
those exceptions, they should be done in a way that it should never create contradictions between the two,
mm-hmm.
right? And there should be a reason why we have exception, right? An
mm-hmm.
agreed reason why the whole family says, okay, today we'll have an exception. Whether, I don't know, it's a holiday
mm-hmm.
or whether there's something happened that led us to this exception, a particular circumstance has led us to change the rule for this particular day. Those things are led to the family to make a decision together without
yeah.
any contradiction and with a reason behind it.
Mm-hmm.
But the key is this, that decisions are made by the dad, but
mm-hmm.
however he allows mom to make those decisions
mm-hmm,
and
yeah.
children know this, that this
mm-hmm.
is how it happened, basically. And having said all of that, it's important to bring about this concept of working together, mm-hmm. that whilst I say that, yes, dad makes a decision or mm-hmm. mom makes all the decisions, mm-hmm. it's really nice if in a family, from time to time, we make decisions together, yeah. right? We explore the different the situation and the different circumstances. Mm-hmm. And based on very important principles that we've learned from the Quran and the mm-hmm. Hadith, and based on the goal that we have, that is mm-hmm. to reach Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, we can sometimes make decisions together. And yeah. the more we involve children in the decision making,
yeah.
but always with that ultimate authority of yeah. the dad, then this really leads to a very balanced family where, yeah. yes, you have an authority, mm-hmm. who's an authority who's just, who's generous, who's kind,
yeah.
but allows discussion to take place and everybody to get involved in the decision yeah. and take responsibility of what they want to do in their lives. This really creates a beautiful balance in one's family.
Yeah, that was a very beautiful explanation, actually. And we talked about how we need to set rules at our homes. And we all know that there's one ultimate authority at everyone's home. But then what parents need to do is, like moms and dad, they need to make decisions together. Thank you so much, Brother Maghdad, for being here. And thank you so much, dear listeners, for joining us on the program. And if you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, please contact us at our email, englishradio@irib.ir, and visit us at our website, parstoday.com. Until another program, fi amanullah.
Islam solves all of its problems. Allah leaves no stone unturned. Perfect with no flaws at all are the laws of Allah. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Food for thought.
Hello, dear listeners, and we now present you an interesting statement from Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, on the matchless merits of his divinely decreed vicegerent, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him, in the sight of God Almighty. Ali is with the Quran, and the Quran is with Ali.
This is Bahman, the month which reminds us of love and empathy.
Bahfizi, 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 Ey shahidon rahe khuda, Ey karde, Bahre ehyaye haq jan fada, Kas batre, Batre می روید تا
Hello and welcome back to the light. A Canadian man has made art by drawing magnificent geometric shapes on snow-covered fields and frozen lakes. Kim Asmussen first draws a sketch with the help of designing software. Then he puts on his snowshoes to stomp around and make squares, circles and triangulars, among others. Asmussen says 15 to 30 centimeters of snow is needed to make out a design. The man uses a compass and a rope to complete his project. Friends help him too. He began his work last year near Ontario and has so far created 20 snowshoe artworks. The biggest one is around 400 meters long.
The German clinic has trained sniffer dogs to detect coronavirus in human saliva samples with 94% accuracy. Bilal, a 3-year-old Belgian shepherd, and Joe Cocker, a 1-year-old Cocker Spaniel, can smell the corona odor that comes from cells in infected people. It's not the virus sending out the odor, but the cell infected with the virus. The clinic's director says the dog's unrivaled sense can enable them to even sniff out COVID patients without any symptoms. Further feasibility tests are required before the sniffer dogs can be put to use in everyday life.
A 70-year-old English grandfather has become the oldest person to row across the Atlantic unassisted. Frank Rothwell broke the world record by completing the 3,000-mile journey in 56 days. Frank rowed from Tenerife in Spain's Canary Islands to Antigua. Such a feat had never been achieved by anyone as old. The septuagenarian sailed across the Atlantic with the aim of raising awareness about Alzheimer's disease and raising £1 million for a UK dementia research charity.
In the UK and other places, I've done a lot of sailing. I've sailed around the world. I've been here 3 or 4 times, sitting in my own yacht. I've sailed around North America, to within 900 miles of the North Pole. I've sailed around South America, around Cape Horn. I'm the only man in the world to sail all the way around America in a figure of eight. Nobody in the world has ever done that except me. There's only 10 people in the world, only 10 people ever sailed all the way around America. And I'm number 10, or I was 2 years ago. I've not looked up since.
Rothwell has sailed all over the world, including 3 previous journeys across the Atlantic. In 2017, he also climbed Mount Kilimanjaro in Tanzania. This shows that to be 70 years young is sometimes far more lively than to be 40 years old.
Well, no matter how old you are, music can always be mesmerizing. In France, a pianist is still addicted to the soft tune of her instrument at the age of 106. Here's more. Colette Mays is a pianist based in Paris. She was born before the start of the First World War and has been playing her favorite instrument for more than a century now. Colette has already released 5 music albums and is now recording her 6th one. The veteran musician says what attracted her to music was a desire for tenderness, which she lacked as a kid at her strict home environment.
In my family, I was raised by a very kind nanny. Mother was very strict. That's how it was at the time, and so I needed tenderness, which was normal. Above where we lived, there were lots of little boys who played the piano. They were always playing the same music. And as a baby, with one finger, I reproduced those melodies. My parents were surprised with that, because playing with dolls didn't amuse me, but playing notes on the piano did. That's why they made me start learning the piano early on.
Well, Colette's favorite musicians are Debussy, Chopin, and Schumann. She looks at the sky for inspiration and says music is more important to her than food. For most of her adult life, Colette has been supporting a piano player at Parisian schools. The dedicated pianist is still marvelously healthy at the age of 106.
Some might say pandas are natural born celebrities, and they are right. In China, Sichuan province, 10 panda cubs have made their first
public debut with throngs of journalists and photographers watching their every move. All of the adorable creatures, which are not named yet, were born in 2020 at the Wollongong Conservation and Research Center. Their age ranges from just 120 to 190 days. Each of the cubs has a weight of about 10 kilograms. Over the past year, a total of 44 panda cubs were born around the globe.
Madagascar is the land of outlandish creatures. Biologists have made another tiny discovery in the north of the island. Scientists say Bruchesia nana could be the world's smallest reptile. Also known as nanochameleon, the diminutive lizard measures less than an inch in length. That means it is as small as a sunflower seed and can fit on your fingertip. The reptilian may be tiny, but it has raised a lot of questions as to why it is this small compared to other vertebrates. Also, unlike most reptiles, female nanochameleons are larger than the males. The species is thought to be critically endangered due to mass deforestation.
An annual light festival lights up the Danish capital, Copenhagen, bringing color and life to the city amid the coronavirus pandemic. Architectural lighting, designs, and pieces have adorned the city in the winter season, attracting many visitors. Some 30 light installations are located in and around the city, spreading under bridges, buildings, and squares. The organizers have planned two routes, each 3 kilometers long, so visitors can enjoy the festival while practicing social distancing.
A light festival in these dark times is very nice. It's some brightness in your life. You get stimulated through the art. And
this is the fourth year the Copenhagen Light Festival is taking place. However, this year, due to the COVID-19 pandemic, guided tours, talks, and pop-up events have been cancelled. Instead, the organizers have prepared an interactive map so visitors can find routes and information about the installations.
An American artist has committed himself to drawing 50,000 bees on buildings around the world. Matthew Willey, who has painted murals for 25 years, came up with the idea after a bee buzzed into his room. His goal is to raise awareness about saving the little fuzzy insects. 50,000 is the number of bees in a healthy, thriving hive in nature. During the past 5 years, Willey has painted over 5,500 of the insects in 30 murals.
My goal has always been to be in every type of neighborhood in the world. So that would be all of the continents, all of, you know, I can't literally paint bees in every community, but to take a cross section and say, you know, in every type of place, these bees have been painted, because I'm really, even though it is a healthy hive of bees that visually will be painted, it's really us. I'm painting the human race into this collective hive.
Willey says many people have so far supported his project with their donations. He hopes that his murals prompt people to rethink their relationship with nature. Bees and other insects are constantly facing a range of threats, from the use of pesticides to habitat loss and climate change. 79-year-old Siberian grandmother ice skates on frozen Lake Baikal to look after her cows, or just to have some fun. Lobosov Morkodova has lived alone by the world's oldest and deepest lake since her husband died in 2011. Her daily routine consists of chopping wood and carrying buckets of water from an ice hole, keeping cows and regularly hitting the ice. Lobosov uses a pair of steel skates made by her father 76 years ago to check on her cows when they walk too far from her house. When asked why she likes skating, the babushka said because her heart longs for it.
I need my skates for various things. I need them to run errands, and I need them for fun. To have a skate or to look for my cows. I can ice skate here and there when walking through the snow is hard. I skate to a direction looking for my cows. And when I see they're not there, I skate to another part and find them roaming there. I call them and they return home, just like that. And without chores, when I just want to ice skate, I can do it.
Even the strong winds
unrelenting cold and constant hard work, don't deta Lubjush Morkhodova, whose name translates as love walking on the sea. Since her husband's death, she has been resisting calls from her family to move back to the city. Lake Baikal is often frozen over for half of the year, and the septuagenarian believes skating on it is the secret to her longevity.
That's a wrap up. Thank you so much for being with us, and bye-bye.
Today's special.
Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you. We present to you today. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, in the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful, dear brothers and sisters, thank you so much for joining us on today's special. Today, Monday, is the 25th of Jamadi al-Thani, 1442 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 20th of Bahman, 1399 of the Islamic Solar Hijri calendar, and 8th of February, 2021 of the Christian Gregorian calendar. We open the Holy Quran and we listen to chapter Hujurat, verse 14.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. قالت الأعراب آمنا قل لم تؤمنوا ولكن قولوا أسلمنا ولما يدخل الإيمان في قلوبكم وإن تطيعوا الله ورسوله لا يلتكم من أعمالكم شيئا إن الله غفور رحيم.
The Bedouin say, "We have believed." Say, "You have not yet believed," but say instead, "We have submitted," for faith has not yet entered your hearts. And if you obey Allah and His Messenger, He will not deprive you from your deeds of anything. Indeed, Allah is forgiving and merciful.
لا إله إلا الله لا إله إلا الله.
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
This blessed verse reflects the difference between Islam and faith, saying that Islam is the outward and legal aspect of faith, and whoever utters the formula. Allah says, "There is no God but Allah, and Muhammad is the messenger of Allah," is recognized as a Muslim and is thus obliged to act upon Islamic laws. But faith is a real and inward affair whose place is human heart rather than his tongue and appearance.
Allah
In the month of Bahman, the month of Islamic Revolution, be with today's special.
On 42nd anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution of Iran, the fundamentals of Iran's Islamic Revolution on today's special. Islamic Revolution, the standard bearer of unity. Dear brothers and sisters, you should know that the imperialism had made considerable investment for the decades or more to create differences between Muslims. For this purpose, books and journals have been published and distributed throughout the world. The sentiments got incited and hatred and malice was created in the hearts of Muslims against one another. Albeit, in the past too, these kinds of enmities were existing, but it has adopted a new depiction during the period imperialism. Islamic Revolution came into existence, and when Muslims of any country witness that the flag we hoisted and loved is that of Islam and the noble Prophet, Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him and his pure progeny, the designs of the enemies thus got foiled. Imperialism never sits idle. The enemies of Islam are never going to sit in comfort when they saw that the revolution and Islamic Republic has maintained unity between Shia and Sunni within and outside the country and have brought them close to each other. They started to make the atmosphere venomous from the outside.
Dr. Fakhr Rouhani.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim wa binastain. Now, when Imam Khomeini was in Najaf and he delivered the speeches and the text of his speeches reached the Iranian nation, I mean those people, those Iranian pilgrims who had the opportunity of going to Iraq on pilgrimage, many of them secretly visited Imam Khomeini, and they received Imam Khomeini's messages carried into the nation in the form of cassettes, I mean voice cassettes, and people were able to listen to the speeches of Imam Khomeini. And little by little we find that Imam Khomeini led this Islamic revolution, especially when Imam Khomeini's son, the late Ayatollah Sayyid Mustafa Khomeini, was poisoned and martyred in Najaf. It never made any stop to the line of Imam Khomeini's struggles against the ex-Pahlavi royal dynasty and ultimately against Americans. Imam Khomeini knew well that the ex-Pahlavi royal dynasty was entirely dependent on the help of Americans, because the ex-Pahlavi royal dynasty was nothing but a puppet of Americans in the whole region and the whole Asian territory. Now Imam Khomeini, because of his Islamic revolution, brought about a fundamental change, a radical change, not only in the fate of the Iranian nation, but also in the fate of the whole territory, and by extension in the fate of the whole world. We find that after the victory of the Islamic Revolution of Iran, that other nations have felt the encouragement, the power to raise their voices against Americans and against other tyrants. We find that because of this, Imam Khomeini intended to encourage people to continue their struggles against tyranny, against oppression, against cruelty.
IRIB English Radio in the month of Bahman presents today's special.
Imam Khomeini's political thought, religious leaders' duties. Usually, the leaders of every faith are considered to be the symbols of that faith. A quick look at the lives of all religious leaders in general and the Prophet, Prophet Muhammad, and the Imams, peace be upon them all, in particular, would indicate that they did not keep themselves aloof from politics and in their lives. Regarding the Prophet's way of life, Imam Khomeini says, "The Prophet's policies on internal and external affairs indicate that one of his tasks was his political activity. In Prophet's time, political and spiritual leadership were not separate, but later political and spiritual leaderships became separated from each other." Brothers and sisters, this is today's special from IRIB English Radio. Now we'll listen to a story from the life of Imam Khomeini, the founder of Islamic Revolution of Iran. Imam's daughter narrates, "Imam had extraordinary respect for his wife. For example, I am not lying if I say that in the period of 60 years of living together, he did not even reach for food on the dinner table before his wife, nor did he had even the smallest expectation from her. I can even say that in the period of 60 years of living together, at no time did he even ask for a glass of water, but would always get it himself." If Imam Khomeini was in such a position that he could not, he would say, "Is the water not here?" He would never say, "Get up and bring me water." He behaved this way not only with his wife, but also with all of us, who were his daughters. During the difficult last days of his life, each time he would open his eyes, if he was capable of speaking, he would ask, "How is Khanum?" We would reply, "She's good. Shall we tell her to come to you?" He would answer, "No, her back is hurting. Let her rest."
So Imam comes back from, you know, from Paris, and they install surface-to-air missiles, 20,000 army men stationed at Mehrabad, and you find 4.5 million humans, ocean of humanity, pouring into the small Mehrabad airport, and you don't even find where those 20,000 soldiers went. This is called tawakkul. وَمَنْ يَتَوَكَّلْ عَلَى اللَّهِ فَهُوَ حَسْبُهُ. When you do your duty towards Allah, some of the people are doing tawakkul. In Arabic, there's a difference between tawakkul and tawakkul. Tawakkul is done after you fulfill your faridah, you leave the result on Allah, and tawakkul means you leave, you escape from your responsibility, and you put your burden on someone else, and you think, let him do the job. He was Ahlul Ishq. He had the deep love of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and the deep love of Prophet and Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam. And had it not been for his deep love, you find, he would not achieve what he achieved. The fourth travel of the soul, fil khalq bil haq. Isn't it right? So this is how he returns back after his levels of purification to serve the mahrumeen and mazlumeen. This is how he served. Hamiya mustadafane jahani. We are the supporters of all the oppressed masses. Let's suppose there's a Jew being oppressed somewhere. In our beautiful religion, Islam, we will stand to support the Jew who's oppressed. And if there is a Shia person who's oppressing somebody somewhere, we are going to condemn that Shia person over his oppression. This is the kind of fairness-based principles that we have.
I invite you to listen to the next episode of today's special from IRIB English Radio. Till then, have a nice time.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.